Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, from the comfort of my kitchen in beautiful Winnipeg, Manitoba. We welcome you to the second ever Illegal Curve Zoomcast, or what I'm now calling the Curvecast. My name is Drew Mandel. I'm your host here of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, typically on TSN Radio 1290. Of course, we know that the COVID pandemic has put a crimp into those plans. We hope to be back on terrestrial radio before we know it. But for the now, we're going to be doing these via Zoom. And without further ado, I'm pleased to introduce my usual gang of cohort or co-conspirators. David Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg join us on the Illegal Curve Zoomcast this evening. Josh Cooper of TheAthletic.com is going to join us as well later on this evening. Gentlemen, good evening and thank you for joining us. David, nice to see you. You missed the inaugural one. You let Ezzy and I be the test dummies, so now you're back with your regular dummies.
Yeah, I didn't want to take a chance and be on the first one if it sucked, but it was pretty good. You guys did a good job, so I figured numero two.
There you go. And Ezzy, nice to see you. You know that we talked about your hair on last week's show, and I can see that it hasn't changed. Hairdressers are open and available to really, it would be like shaving a baboon at this point in time, though.
I'm thinking of actually just going on Kijiji or eBay and looking for an old Floby. I'm thinking that I can just suck this right off and suck my beard right off. That's what I'm thinking. I don't need to spend, you know, $30 or $35.
$35 haircut.
$30. Somebody's doing
well for himself.
Yeah, you know, I like to have a nice coif every once in a while. Obviously, my last coif was a year ago. But I told you, Drew, unless I'm back at work, I'm keeping this going. I'm not shaving. I'm not getting a haircut. I'm going to keep this going. It could be 2 years.
You know, soon enough, you'll be Peter Griffin when he has the little baby bird growing in that beard. have a nice nest for a baby there. It's about time you have a new baby in your house. It's already been, almost a year since the last one, right?
Yeah, that's right. I just know that it's good to have Dave M back because, like Dave said, he just wanted to know, you know, that the IC Zoomcast was, you know, going to get off on the right foot, and it's good to have Dave M back. Like we were talking about last week, it's just weird at this point. We haven't done the radio show in what, 2.5 months at this point.
So I think so.
We're just
I think so.
But it's going to be great the day that we're back.
Well, it's funny because even uploading last week's show to the site and legalcurve.com and to the
your company, like, man.
Of course. But it was interesting because I actually was like shocked at how long since the previous one. And I was like, I can't believe it's been that long since we've done a show.
Well, now we're doing our Curvecast. So we are back at it. And let's get
soon enough, Dave. Soon enough.
Let's get back starting. We'll talk about, a little bit of the news surrounding the Winnipeg Jets from earlier this week. We'll start with the announcement that the Jets signed 2018 fifth-round draft pick Declan Chisholm, defenseman, to an entry-level contract after he finished his junior hockey career. They choose not to sign contracts to both Jacob Cederholm, entry-level deals to Jacob Cederholm and Giovanni Velotti. So let's start with Chisholm. I mean, this is obviously a guy who just finished playing as an overager in junior. He's going to presumably join the Manitoba Moose defense next season. And, you know, it looks like, at least for now, you know, the Jets have another potential late-round pick that could, you know, be in their system, and who knows what he's going to eventually develop into.
Yeah, I'll jump in first, then I'll let, you know, Dave address it, especially, you know, considering that Dave M covers the Moose more than anybody, really. And, you know, it's kind of interesting, right? Because, you know, Chisholm and Velotti were both fifth rounders in 2018, right? That was the draft that was in Dallas. And that was actually, you know, the first draft, 5 years, Dave, that we were at. And I was a little bit surprised that the Jets didn't sign Velotti, even though I know that his offensive totals were down. But when you're talking about, you know, Jacob Cederholm, I mean, he's a guy that I think he just didn't quite develop, you know, how the Jets wanted him to. And he was, I remember, a draft pick back in 2016, the Line A year. And you know, Cederholm's obviously, you know, a big body, and they knew that he was going to be, you know, one of those players who took a little while to develop, right, Dave? But I don't think that anybody really expected him to be out of the Jets organization this early, right? When you're talking about, you know, what is he, 22 years old, 23 years old. But, you know, Chisholm is really an interesting prospect, guys, because, you know, he's coming off of a monster year. And, you know, sure, he's a 20-year-old in the Ontario Hockey League. But, you know, when you think of that left side, right, with Willie Hainola and Dylan Sandberg, and then you're going to have a guy like Declan Chisholm who will probably play, you know, at least one, more likely, you know, a couple of years in the American Hockey League. I mean, that left side was really, you know, a weak point for the Jets, you know, going back, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. But when you think of, you know, some of the prospects that are now in the system, you know, it's pretty exciting. So, you know, Chisholm is a guy who I obviously haven't, I've never watched play. I've only seen, you know, YouTube highlights of him. And I know that, you know, the Jets scouting staff was super high on him. But, you know, that was kind of my takeaway from, you know, those three players, was that Chisholm, I think we all expected to sign. But Vladdy, I'm not sure what happened there. You know, if he just fell out of favor with the Jets organization, or they didn't like what they saw. But Chisholm is definitely a guy, when you consider he's a fifth round pick, guys. I mean, it seems like his upside is fairly high when you consider he's only 20 years old.
Yeah, and he had, I think, 69 points in 59 or 56 games this season. And he's an interesting prospect, right? Like you were saying, Ezzy, and I think a lot of people, you know, like the offensive upside that he brings to the game. And, you know, Kenny Weaver, The Athletic, wrote an article about him, his path to the NHL. And obviously, to your point, and it's a good one, it'll have to be through the Moose, and he'll spend, you know, anywhere from 1 to 3 years in the Manitoba Moose system, I suspect, before he becomes someone that might be relied on for the Jets. But yeah, that left side is starting to become a little bit more productive from a Winnipeg Jets prospect development point of view. And I think Chisholm will play a big role in that. And I think there was a lot of concern that, you know, the deadline obviously was Monday to get him done, get that deal done. And it hadn't gotten done before that. And there was some concern, but, you know, I mean, ultimately he did an interview today with Jamie Thomas of Jets TV, just talking about getting the deal done, and just, he didn't seem concerned. You know what I mean? I know there were people who were like worried that he wasn't going to get it done with Winnipeg, and he was like seen as one of those, you know, those prospects that if he doesn't sign a deal with the Jets, would likely, you know, another team would try and snatch him up. But, or it would get him in the draft if he was obviously be eligible, I guess, to go back in the 2020 draft. But, you know, it's one of those situations where, yeah, it's never a bad thing to have another young prospect, especially on the left side, who can, you know, develop within the system and be there as you're, you know, you've got all these guys who are going to be productive for a number of years. And we always talk about the need for depth, right? And, you know, we've seen it here with the Jets this year. They have 10 defensemen right now, mm-hmm. for whenever these playoffs restart. So you're always going to have to go to your depth. And I think he's one of those young guys, along with, you know, Leon Gavanke and Johnny Kovacevic, within that Jets organization.
Logan Stanley is always, you know, he's the guy who, no, he's sort of not fallen out of favor necessarily, but he's the forgotten man.
No, but I'm just talking about the new crop of young guys who are in the Jets system. You know, those are the first year pros that were with the Manitoba Moose this year. Logan Stanley, you know, again, I'm not saying he's fallen out of favor, there's very mixed reviews, right? Like, you listen to some scouts, they love him. There's other scouts who don't love his game so much. And I think the interesting thing from him is just, and he's talked to me about it, he's not thinking that his path to the NHL was this year, right? Like, so he gets the way he would get to the NHL, and that's through a period of time. So I think that from Logan Stanley's point of view, you know, I mean, people are quick to drop a bust label on him, you know, when you're a first round pick. Mm-hmm. And it's all, again, we talked about this on the show before. It's about your expectations, really, right? Like, what are your expectations for Logan Stanley? If your expectations are, you know, he's going to be a third pairing guy for a number of years, potentially, then maybe that's where he's going to fall, or potentially a second pair. So I'm just saying, like, it's one of those things, like, even though it seems like he's not there yet, I would wait at least another year before you start throwing labels on a guy, because you'll never know what's going to happen to him next year. He's got the time to develop, right? The Jets don't need him right now.
No.
So
you're absolutely right. And I mean, it's too soon to say bust. I mean, I think in hindsight, he obviously probably wouldn't have been a first round pick if you were redoing the draft.
Hindsight is 2020.
Yes, of course. So, I mean, it is, but he certainly, nobody's counting on him to, if he develops into an NHLer at this point, I think it would be a pleasant surprise more than anything else.
He's got things he's got to work on. There's no question about it.
Yeah. We mentioned.
I was just going to say, further to Dave's point, there's a possibility that, Stanley gets into a few games, whenever the next regular season is, whether that's, December of this year or January of next year, we have no idea. But I think, the point that you were making earlier about, Gavanke and Johnny Kovacevic, and, you throw in Declan Chisholm, and then, you've got Luke Green, who obviously has, had injury issues, Dave. And then, we mentioned Logan Stanley and
Nelson Noze is still around.
Right. And, people see, the Jets signing Dylan Sandberg. That was, 2 months ago now or 3 months ago, I forget. But, they see Sandberg and Chisholm and they think, okay, well, these guys are going to be playing for the Jets. Well, no, Ville Heinola, guys, is probably has the best chance of playing significant regular season games for the Jets next regular season. These are just all good prospects for Pascal Vincent. And, you got to give the Jets scouting staff, some credit, because there's no doubt that, defense has been an organizational weakness, especially on the left side, right? Like, we've been doing this show for 11 years. And since the Jets came back in 2011, we've been talking about it. Obviously, the right side has been, a position of strength, but, look at that left side. And it's going to be really good when you throw in guys like Sandberg and Heinola there with Josh Morrissey. So it's an exciting time to be a Jets fan, really.
To Dave's point, adding organizational depth is never a bad thing, whether or not it necessarily translates into a regular NHL player or just a guy who's going to be, a guy you can bring up when need be. That's never a bad thing. Were you surprised they didn't offer an entry-level deal to Cederholm, Dave? I mean, you've seen him play. He played the majority of his time in Jacksonville in the ECHL, but he did get into some Moose games. Were you surprised that they didn't offer him an entry-level deal?
No, just simply because they didn't really use him last year, right? Like, he got recalled. I'm fairly certain, I'm almost positive, he didn't play a game for the Moose last year. So, he played for Jacksonville. He may have gotten one or two recalls. Good kid, really good kid. But based on usage, no, I'm not surprised, because they were using other guys ahead of him when they did have recalls. So to me, it was a little bit of the writing on the wall for him, just because obviously, you have a guy you've drafted and he's a fourth round pick. And to me, when you recall him, but you're using guys who aren't even your draft picks ahead of him, it's probably a pretty good indication that you don't have faith in the player. So, I'm not surprised he didn't get an ELC, no.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, there are rules surrounding the number of contract players you can have under contract, and that's, of course, 50 players. And most teams don't really like to go over 46, 47 and give themselves a little bit of flexibility. So, that mm-hmm. It was a numbers game for Jacob Cederholm, and obviously he didn't crack the numbers that the Jets needed to want him to get pen on paper there. He'd, of course, been playing under, PTOs, or were they?
No, he was on an AHL. He was on a 2 year AHL. He had a 2 year AHL deal with the Moose, and it was interesting because I've talked to him this year. I talked to him when he was up last with the Moose, and a very similar actually conversation that I had with Logan Stanley, in the sense that it's interesting. Like, a lot of young guys are just ready. Like, they want. It's funny how Pascal Vincent said, like, with Jansen Harkins, like, he wasn't asking, when's my turn? He was just doing what he needed to do. And it was – Cederholm was the same way. There was no misunderstanding of his place, but he understood what he needed to do, and he was happy with the progression. And he was, kind of ready to soldier on and continue to do those things that he needed to do to get to that next step, whether that was the AHL, the NHL. That was his mindset when he and I last spoke, when he was in Winnipeg, in his last recall.
And Dave, I agree with what Drew said earlier too, right? Like, it's a question of the amount of defensemen the Jets are going to have in the system next year, and mm-hmm. it's his age, right? And that's why, for me, and I don't have any insight on this, but, Giovanni Vellati.
That's never stopped you before.
Yeah, exactly. But Vellati's only 20 years old, right? So when you're talking about, Cederholm, he's a couple of years older. So that's why it's surprising. And again, it might just be, a question of, falling out of favor, or, you know, we don't really know what happened there, but that's why it's a little bit surprising, because as we talked about, both guys were fifth round picks back in 2018. But, you know, for, you know, the purposes of, you know, looking forward, you know, Declan Chisholm is the guy the Jets signed. So it's going to be fun to watch how he progresses, because as a fifth round pick, you know, the expectations aren't as high as they would be for a first rounder, second rounder, right? So it looks like, yeah, you know, he has an NHL career ahead of him.
He certainly has a professional hockey career ahead of him, and Giovanni Velotti will go back into the NHL draft whenever that's going to be held, sometime in the fall.
In 2025.
Seriously, who knows when this year's draft is going to be held, but Velotti will be draft eligible again in Cedarholm. Of course, will become a free agent where he can sign a professional deal wherever he's able to do so. So that's what's happening on the Jets front. Before we move on to back to the NHL return to play, announcements and everything else, just want to make a quick note, or just mention, of course, Blake Wheeler spoke quite eloquently this week about racism and about the upheaval that we're seeing throughout the United States, and to some extent here in Canada. It is a bit of a, I don't want to say the word revolution, because I think that's probably too strong right now, but it's amazing the images and the videos and the call to action that we're seeing. And I thought Blake Wheeler did a very admirable job speaking about a very difficult issue and speaking eloquently about it. Dave, you were on the call, the Zoom conference call when we spoke, and I was impressed by what he had to say, and is speaking so well in a very difficult situation like that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's you know, tons of eyes on him. There's tons of pressure. You know, you don't want to be saying the wrong thing, but I thought he was honest. You know, he was raw. He just said what he was thinking. It didn't feel scripted at all. It just felt like a guy who was speaking his mind. And I think, you know, I think there's a kudos that goes out to him for being open and willing to share in that regard. And we're seeing, you know, tons of people now from the NHL doing that and speaking in some capacity, you know, on their Instagram or on their Twitter. To me, and it's interesting, the one thing I said in the papers yesterday, I think, was that it's not what you say today, it's how you follow through.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that I'm not a scorekeeper for anybody, because I can only control myself and worry about myself. So I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, well, Blake Wheeler hasn't done X, Y, and Z since then, because that's not for me to decide, that's for him to decide. But I just think, like, that's the key to this, a movement like this, and that's everything that you read is, oh, Josh Cooper's in the house. But everything that you read, everything that you read about this sort of that notion is that it's not what's happening right the second; it's, you know, the continuation. It's how you move forward from this. So, provided that you see that continue, I think that's where you're going to get the power of players like Blake Wheeler, or, you know, anybody who's there's a million guys who have spoken. So that to me is kind of the importance of that, of them using their platforms in the way they have.
Well said, Dave Minuk. And without further ado, let's welcome into the program, into the CurveCast, as we're calling it, our good friend from theathletic.com, Josh Cooper, joins us. Joshua, nice to see you again, buddy. Usually we get to hear your dulcet tones. We don't normally get to see your pretty face on camera with us, but it is good to see you, buddy.
Look at how wide my smile is. Is this all like recorded and go, like when this goes up, like are they going to see us all? Like
they will have the option to both watch the video and or just listen to the audio. So
I can see how happy I am.
Exactly. They will see that big smile that's on your face. They will see those pearly whites if they so choose to go to YouTube and then watch the video there.
And my hair is all messed.
Should probably actually be a daddy cast at this point. I mean, it's I think
harsh blow to Dave there.
Five kids between us. Hey, there's time for Dave. I mean, there's nothing saying that it might not be six kids, but we've got a lot of kids here, Drew, between us.
We do have a lot of children, and I would say that Dave does have a child, and that's you, Ezzy. He's kept you alive for longer than you have kept your own kids alive.
So I'm now actually wondering if I lock the door to this room, because my kid's going to march up here in like 10 minutes and take a bath next door. So
does he have good insight?
No, not really.
How about insight into politics?
It sounds like he's perfect for the show then.
Actually, are you guys fans of Monty Python, The Holy Grail?
Oh,
I've seen it.
Yeah, so he knows how to do the coconut run. thing. Oh, I go, come, Patsy. And he's like, you know, does that. So, or not that. He's like, you know, does this thing. So if you're a fan of that movie, you would know what I'm talking about. If you're not, then you're like, what is Josh doing right now? This is so, confusing.
You're teaching your son well. You're using him as a sponge, which is what all good parents do for their children.
Oh, this has been quite the time for Disney Plus and Disney Plus. And it's like each week my wife and I are like, what are we going to watch? But I'll tell you, we actually strayed outside the Disney Dome last week. And we watched Milo and Otis with him. Oh my God. There's all sorts of weird stuff they do in that. It's like they drop a cat like 90 feet down like rapids and stuff like that. The animal abuse in that movie is nuts. And it's all narrated by Dudley Moore. It is crazy. It's even wilder. There's more animal abuse in that than Tiger King.
That's a lot of animal abuse for a to watch. That would probably be, you know, there would probably be some questions you're gonna have to have with them. Some serious conversations about
alleged animal abuse. I want to say, by the way, like it looks like animal abuse. We don't know for certain, but all narrated by Dudley Moore. So
I'm sure.
I'm just amazed at how many different channels there are now. Like, I'm gonna age myself a little bit here. I'm still 20 years younger than Drew, but you know, when you go back to, you know, our youth, I mean, there were like two or three channels that had cartoons. Now with Netflix and Crave and, you know, HBO and all this stuff, there's like 20 different kids channels. So like all these cartoons, they start to look like each other, right? So that's what's been, you know, kind of
and they're all fairly terrible.
Yeah, most of them are pretty bad.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Even, I mean, the good ones are just, you know, marginally terrible, whereas the bad ones are completely awful and unwatchable. But
I can't get through a show with you all, though, without at least making one reference to this. But we have HBO Max in the States. I don't know if you have that in Canada now, but
we don't.
No, but we have something called HBO Max where we have like so many seasons of The Bachelor and Bachelorette and Bachelor in Paradise and even The Bachelor Canada.
Wow,
you get stadiums. I'll put it this way. Like, when it was early quarantine and I was binge watching stuff, that actually when my wife and I were actually not really binge watching, but like when I was coming up with my binge watch like wish list or whatever, I wish we had that. Now we're like kind of later. Well, I don't know where we are in quarantine, but now we're at a point where we're like really set on what we're binging. So like we know what we're doing every night as far as binge watching. I wish that I could have at least had that option early on.
Yeah, we've transitioned to some extent out of the quarantine and into the curfew, but that's a separate issue that we probably aren't going to talk about.
Totally different issue. Yeah,
totally different issue. Mentioned. And we're not smart enough or insightful enough to talk about that on this podcast. So let's talk.
You mentioned Bachelor earlier, and then you also mentioned Tiger King. I was almost thinking that maybe those two could be combined somehow, and maybe there's a season of The Bachelor that takes place, you know, on Carol Baskin's property or something like that.
So actually, I'm going to tie this back to hockey.
Thank God.
Believe it or not. No, there is. So I do know for a fact that I want to say it was like some members of the Kings broadcast crew or the crew that broadcast Kings games went to the Carol Baskin Animal Sanctuary when I don't know what year it was, but I definitely may or may not have been sent pictures of Daryl Evans, the legendary Kings broadcaster, wearing all of his, you know, Kings gear, because that's, he either wears a suit or he wears like his King sweats, you know, at the, was it Big Cat Animal Sanctuary or whatever it's called. But Carol got Joe Zoo. That's the big news. She won. So yeah, and A, she won, but B, we also found out that the will of her dead husband was forged. So a win-lose scenario for Carol Baskin right now.
As long as they don't find her body, find the dead husband's body, and continue to not find that body, I think she's still going to come out as the winner. And when that happens, then
Drew, that's season two. That's, we're going to find that out in season two.
Season two of the show. Okay, let's move on from Tiger King and everything else. Josh, we obviously haven't spoken to you in a little while, given everything that's going on. You know, the NHL has announced that phase two of the return to play protocol can begin on Monday. No surprise there. That's, of course, the voluntary phase where players, limited numbers of players, can start working out in team facilities. before we sort of get into some of the details, do you think they should even be embarking down this road? We talked about this last week when we had Scott Billick on the show with us, our colleague from the Winnipeg Sun here in Winnipeg. But from your perspective, Josh, you know, should the NHL be even going down this road to trying to resume hockey in the next, within the next 6 to 8 to 10 weeks?
Well, the only question I have to ask on that is, why is the NBA seem so gung-ho, and why are NBA players seem so excited to get back to play, but NHL players are like so tepid about it? I mean, I don't know. There maybe there's a financial component as far as the NHL, as far as them going back to play, that should make them want to play. I mean, look, like, there's obviously, I think if there's anything we've learned in the last 2.5 months, there's bigger things at play in the world than just sports. But at the same time, like, these are massive industries. There's lots of people who make a lot of money off of these industries. And, you know, I think if you can and you can do it safely, why not? I mean, it just seems to me that, I mean, you know, it's a tough call, and I don't think that every player is on board, and I completely understand the guys who don't want to play. Like, I totally understand. Like, if I was in this situation at my current age, being 37, and let's say, you know, I've made somewhere in the realm of, like, you know, $30 million playing in the NHL, and I have two kids or whatever, like, yeah, there's a question I have about going back to play. Like, is it worth it? I mean, I can't answer that, but I mean, you know, and I'm not like a civil or a civic or civil scientist or you know, I don't, or a sociologist. I don't really follow human behavior, but I think there would be something really great about, especially right now, the ability of sports to come back and for us as fans to consume the content and watch it. I was actually all in on the June draft idea. I thought that was actually a tremendous thought by the creative people at the NHL. Obviously ended up not going very far, but I mean, look, like, we need a distraction. And is it worth it? I mean, look, it's a tough situation when you are one of these players. I'm not one of them. I'm not in their shoes. I haven't been out, like, not playing for a while. But I also do think that, look, like, you got, everyone's trying to get back to work. That's their jobs. And also, from what I've read, as far as the NHL's return to play plan, I mean, that is a very carefully crafted, very cautious plan. Because the last thing the NHL wants, I'm sure, is to have anyone involved with teams, you know, having the most tragic consequences, being dying because of the coronavirus in one of these situations. So, I mean, all I can say is my wife's a nurse practitioner, and she has to go to the hospital every day and with a mask and hand sanitizer and, like, care for patients. And this is a situation where guys are going to be much safer than she is in a lot of other places. So, but I can also understand why they wouldn't want to go through the risk or also be away from their families. Like, I do get that, but there's, I just feel like it is. I feel like it is worth it, but also I'm not the one putting my life on the line, so I can't make that decision for a player. But I can. But I would be fine if, say, you know, I know Eric Staal has been very, I guess, made some comments on The Athletic, or maybe it was a Zoom call with reporters. I'm not totally sure, but about, you know, doubts or whatever. And I would be fine if a guy didn't want to play. Like, I would understand. But as far as going back to answering your question, is it worth it? I can see a situation where it certainly can. I would love to see it. Selfishly, I would love to see it. But I also would understand some players who would not want to. But I also think that the plans that have been crafted, at least the ones that I've seen, that the public has seen, I haven't seen anything different than anyone else. It looks very safe and very secure. And if you would ever want if any employer put those plans in place for you to be able to do your job and get paid very well to do it, I would feel okay about it. Doesn't mean I would do it, but I would feel okay about whatever decision I would make.
And that's why, Josh, sorry, Drew, I was just going to jump in and say, that's why, you know, the next couple phases, I think, are going to be, you know, so interesting to see how they develop, because you know, Pierre LeBrun spoke about it today, you know, on insider trading, like the first two phases are, that's, we're only at the midway point, right?
Well, and you know, phase two is,
well, when you talk about training camps and you talk about, you know, the testing and, you know, we still have no idea, you know, who the hub cities are going to be, right? And we probably won't know for at least another week or two. But really, you know, Josh made a good point there when he was talking about, you know, safety. I mean, because the NHL, the NBA, they're multi-billion dollar businesses. I mean, they're not going to put the players in a position where, you know, they're at more risk than they need to. Is there going to be a chance that, you know, a player or, you know, a team staff member contracts COVID-19? I imagine there will be, but, you know, what I think is going to be just so fascinating to see unfold is how the NHL and the NHLPA come together, you know, to get these next two phases done, because, you know, we know how much money is at risk, right? And, you know, it's not just for the owners, it's for the players as well. And, you know, Josh, you mentioned, you know, the 35, 36 year old player, like a guy like, you know, Eric Staal, he might be, you know, a little bit more reticent to not want to go back. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of players that are in that kind of 25 to 35 range that, you know, they're probably going to have a lot of, you know, internal debates amongst themselves and their families, right? So I'm with you. I do think that it is worth it. I'm a little bit skeptical, you know, that we're going to see training camps begin right on July 10th. We'll see, but I think there is a strong possibility that the actual, you know, play-in games might not start till, you know, the second or third week of August.
And one thing, you know, and I mentioned this a little bit, was, you know, why are NBA players so gung-ho about going back? You know, like, they seem to be fine with it. Maybe the plan that the NBA has put forth is better. I do think there's a lot of trust in Adam Silver as a commissioner versus in the NHL. You look at the sports that are having trouble right now as far as trying to come back. There are sports that don't have a lot of faith in their commissioner from a player perspective. Baseball and Rob Manfred, and the NHL with Gary Bettman. Personally, I've never had any issues with Gary Bettman. I've thought that he's never gotten the fair shake he deserves on a lot of levels. I know in your fair city, he's adored. If Winnipeg ever wins the Stanley Cup in Winnipeg, well, I imagine if it happened this year, it'd be the one time Gary Bettman would probably be cheered. You know, and it wouldn't be in Winnipeg. Or maybe what, I have no idea what the actual plan would be for the Cup final, like if they make it that far. But I just don't really quite grasp, you know, these are guys who are, I think there's a, personally, and like, this is just my opinion, and again, like, I totally understand, we've all been cooped up for so long, we've all been told about the risks of the coronavirus to where, like, we all, I mean, even myself, like, I don't love going to the grocery store per se, but like, you know, I think of the risk that these guys take on a day-in, day-out basis when it comes to playing hockey. They have a flying piece of frozen vulcanized rubber just going around all over the place, skate blades, stick blades. Like, goalies stand in the net and people shoot 105-mile-an-hour slap shots at them, and they take it. But they're horrified of this virus, and yet they could – I mean – this sounds horrible. They could very easily have tragic consequences in a game. I always, you know, whenever I was covering the Pred, when I covered the National Predators on, when I covered that beat, the Tennessee, when I first met you all, I mean, I would always just, you know, every time I would say goodbye to my then girlfriend, now wife and mother of my child, I always have in the back of my head, you know, like, yeah, I'll see you at this hour, but, you know, could be staking out a hospital potentially. You never know. I mean, because of how dangerous the sport of hockey is. So I just find this all to be interesting. And again, like, different sports, different monetary setup. Also, it seems like the NHL is trying to negotiate some sort of CBA, or the NHL and the PA are trying to negotiate some sort of CBA extension right now, per Pierre LeBrun. But overall, I don't really, it's interesting watching the basketball mindset of it, of just basically like, let's go, let's get back, let's do this. Like, we're pumped for it. Like, LeBron, like, wants to chase that championship, even if he's going to be doing it like in an empty arena in Disney World, you know, versus I haven't gotten that sense from any NHL player, but the best thing I've read from a quote perspective from a hockey player was, I'm pretty sure it was Mark Giordano said, you know, with the whole like, oh, there could be an asterisk, you know, next to this because of how the cup could be awarded. And he said, this could be the hardest cup to win. What are you even talking about? And I agree 100%, which is also why I'm somewhat on board with the Canadians versus the Blackhawks in the cup final, because I think that would be hilarious with this whole, with this whole scenario.
The two most deserving teams.
Yeah, well, everyone was so, like, ticked off at this scenario to begin with. Well, also, you guys know I'm an unabashed Shea Weber fan, so I would just love to see him win a Stanley Cup. Obviously, it'll be a horrible scenario, like, not being, you know, be able to, like, you know, parade and party with your home fans. But, yeah, I want to see a team that really had no business being there, being there winning the Cup, because I think it would be a hilarious story.
It would be pretty funny. And you mentioned the asterisk and with Mark Giordano's comments, and the announcement from earlier today, which I was admittedly surprised about, is that all four rounds of the playoffs, not the play-in series or the qualification round will remain as best of five, but all four rounds are going to be best of seven. I'm surprised about that. You're adding at least another couple weeks to this, you know, a never-ending season, but I guess at this point in time, you're in for a dime. You might as well be in for a dollar and go full bore and make it a playoffs like every other playoffs.
Well, yeah, Drew, you know, Josh just mentioned Mark Giordano, right? So if Calgary ends up going all the way, and obviously, you know, they're not a team that most people would pick to go all the way, but you could play a maximum of 33 games, right? At the very least, if you go all the way, you're going to be playing 28. Yeah, so like that's a lot of hockey, but I agree there is that, you know, factor to this that you could have a team that, as Josh said, had no business being in the playoffs. For sure, Montreal is one of those teams, and you know, Chicago, I don't think anybody is going to say that, you know, they thought they were going to make a magical run, you know, with 10 games left in the season, you know, before the COVID-19 crisis hit. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be pretty ridiculous, and you know, we heard from Pierre LeBrun today that, you know, the NHL and the owners, the general managers, they wanted, you know, best of five as opposed to, you know, best of seven, at least for one of the rounds, right? But I guess it's all about integrity. But you're right, Drew, it could mean another 2 weeks.
I find it very odd, Dave, and, you know, I want your insights on this because we haven't had a chance to talk to you about sort of the whole return to play concept. Mm-hmm. I find it very odd that the players who are doing this for free, remember, they're doing it, they've been paid their salaries for the year except for one paycheck, and this is all about, I guess, trying to maintain, keep escrow lower for years to come, but that the NHL players themselves would be the ones saying, no, we want a best of seven in all rounds. I find that to be a little bit on the odd side, Dave.
Yeah, I'm with you, Drew. I was fine. I mean, they used to do best of five, you know, in the 80s. It wasn't like, it's not like it's never been done before. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and in the idea, for the sense of expediency, like, you know, knocking off a few extra games isn't necessarily a bad thing. And the truth is, like, to Josh's point, in terms of like that idea of an asterisk, I actually kind of like this idea in the sense that, you know, especially if it's a play-in, it's kind of like with the wild card in baseball. You know, when those teams manage to do it, you have to do it by winning more games than everybody else because you're at a disadvantage in theory. So, you know, you'd have to win 19 games, right? 16 in Stanley Cup playoffs plus three in the play-in to advance and to win the Stanley Cup. But, I mean, it's going to be, from a health perspective, it'll be such a phenomenal playoffs to watch because you're going to have all these teams that are playing at an optimum in quotes, because obviously guys like Laine talk about how bad their skating may be, and we'll see how long this training camp plan is, whether it's 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatnot. But I just think I agree with you. I think it's a little surprising that they felt the need to keep it consistent, because if we're learning anything about these playoffs, it's that it's like a brand, like you can set it however you want. In fact, it, to me, it's an opportunity for the NHL to really throw the game plan out the window and kind of design something that looks completely new, because there are no expectations that this is going to look like every other playoffs, right? The teams it's are going to be.
There's no way, Dave, that this is ever going to happen again. So if you're going to do this,
God willing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. We don't know for sure that it's going to happen, but I agree with Dave. I mean, let's get excited about it, right? Like, there always is the chance that it doesn't happen, but You know, let's look at it from the perspective of, you know, a team that's in the qualification round could go on a nice long run.
But that's why the NHL, I think, missed an opportunity. They could have done something totally out of the box. I mean, your colleague Josh at The Athletic, Eric Dehatchik, for years has been arguing about has been saying, you know, do the name your own opponent concept for the playoffs. And I know people have been saying that it's gimmicky or whatever else, but I mean, you're in uncharted territory here. Why not do something completely revolutionary? The only thing the NHL is doing that's, you know, sort of completely revolutionary is that they're going back to how it used to be, where it's no longer a bracket for the actual playoffs. It's they're reseeding after every round. I think it's a missed opportunity from my perspective that they could have gone completely into the drawing board and created something new and interesting that might garner the attention of the casual fan there, Josh.
Well, you know, the one thing that on our podcast out here that I do with Shane O'Brien.
Point Breakaway.
Point Breakaway, that's right. My wife came up with that name. Yeah, but with my – we collaborated. I said, we got to come up with some sort of California thing. Point Break is the movie of California, Southern California.
Great
movie. Oh, yeah. I could quote that movie for days. I'm not going to bore you with I'm an FBI or whatever. But anyway, beyond that, especially not right now. But beyond that, you know, what we talked about was doing 31, all 31 teams, one game, winner take all, NCAA tournament style.
Sure.
Like you have a short tournament, get it out of the way, get it done. Don't have to worry about this like long protracted training camp. Everyone's team is represented. Every fan base can watch. Every fan base can get excited about a Stanley Cup. I mean, it wouldn't have happened. By the way, my kid I can hear now getting into the bath to my right here. So I may have to go in a few minutes, boys. Sorry.
That's all good.
Otherwise, my wife may kill me. But I just think the higher the entertainment value, the better. I think the wackier the scenario, in the situation we're in, the better. I know nobody agrees with me on that. And that's fine. Like I totally know I'm kind of by myself on this, but I really think you just sort of have to throw kind of the sanctity of the cup, all these different things that we talk about, out the window.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be every year, but this is one year in a global pandemic, so you know, let chaos reign. It's already raining.
Yeah, well,
basically.
Well, when we say chaos, we mean chaos. Yeah, we mean chaos on the ice, obviously.
<That's>
yeah,
right.
It's raining. It's raining everywhere in the United States right now. But and when I say chaos is raining, I mean there's a very important discussion going on that we've needed to have for a long time in this country. But I think it's really. I think I agree with you all. Like if you're gonna go back to the drawing board and look, like there's been so many times in history where the rules have had to be altered. And I just think of, you know, like World War II, for example, right? I mean, Ted Williams went to go off and fight for the US Army. I guess he was in the Air Force, the Navy, he was a pilot. I mean, how much did the Red Sox love that? I mean, not a lot, but extreme circumstances force extreme situations to happen. The Stanley Cup was not awarded in, what was it, 1920 because of the Spanish flu? Was that the year?
Yeah.
I mean,
1920.
Yeah, it was 1920. Yeah. So I think sometimes you're just, and look, like it let's, or maybe, you know, instead of a one game winner take all, maybe it's like double elimination for every round with all 31 teams. I don't know. But like, because now I'm sitting here, like, and I mostly cover the Kings and the Ducks out here. I mean, you may go from March until January without any hockey for these teams.
Yeah, that's what, like, I was going to ask you, Josh.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like, how is that the least bit fair? I mean, you know, those are the two teams you cover primarily, of course, for the Athletic, the Ducks and the Kings. And, you know, you had these are two teams that, you know, you're asking professional athletes who are used to playing a schedule and used to being in somewhat of a rhythm to not play their sport for 9 months is almost unheard of. Do you think that the seven teams that aren't being invited to a bubble city are going to be at a disadvantage next year, whenever that begins?
I really don't know, but I mean, it's I feel bad for those teams' marketing staffs. I feel bad for those teams' content teams. Like, I feel bad for, I mean, for us as far as trying to figure out different things. I mean, look, like, that's why I wanted the June draft so badly, was because, like, I wanted something. Now we may not, you know, like, the Kings and Ducks were going to pick high. Their fan bases were super stoked about it. I mean, I'm not even a fan, and I was pretty pumped about it, because it's like, you get, like, the draft is such a beautiful thing, because these guys are all completely unflawed and pristine and pure until they actually step on the ice. And that's what makes it such a wonderful event, and why fans love it so much, because it also gives you this sort of ray of hope. And I was thinking, okay, at some point in June, you get that with the two fan bases that we have. I really don't know how it impacts these guys. I mean, you know, for example, a guy, you know, like Drew Doughty, man, I don't know. I mean, he's now 30 years old and has always been just such a natural hockey playing rink rat, to all of a sudden not be able to play. Like, I don't know how that impacts him. You know, Ryan Getzlaf's in his mid-30s. You know, I don't know. Like, I just don't know with the players out here how it impacts them. The younger guys, it probably helps a little bit, because it gives them a little more time to physically mature, maybe go in the weight room, get a little bit more strength on them. But I just think from an overall, like, these teams, I mean, I think that's in part why you saw Los Angeles and the Kings, for example, bid to be one of those bubble cities, is because you're potentially going to have that building not have Lakers, Clippers, Kings, I mean, Sparks, all concerts. Yeah. I mean, it's a way to at least create some jobs. So, which is why I'm completely on board with the LA bid, because it honestly, it helps my city. Like, and I'm not afraid to say that. It completely does. It helps my city. I'm on board with it. And I would love for LA to be a hub city. What happened? I don't know. Yeah, as far as these teams go, I don't know. Like, but the only thing that I could say that's a positive for them is that they both have a lot of young talent. The Kings more so than the Ducks in their minor league and kind of junior and college, or just overall in their system in general. But it gives these kids a little more time to grow, maybe a la, you know, 2004-05 lockout type situation where they had a year to mature in the AHL.
Well, let me ask you this question, Josh, and if you have to go just to
– Yeah, probably after this question. Okay. I can hear Ethan getting into the bath right now, and I can also hear him going, daddy, daddy. So
I'll make it a quick one. Ducks general manager Bob Murray came out and addressed the media earlier this week. I believe it was yesterday, and some people were sort of taken aback at how pointed some of his comments were about the team and about the job that Dallas Eakins did. What did you think about Bob Murray's comments about the Ducks season, the Ducks head coach, and sort of the hullabaloo that may have been created by his comments?
Yeah, I was really impressed by what Bob had to say. When I say impressed, I mean kind of can't believe it overall.
Too forthcoming.
You know, on the one hand, look, you know, love the honesty, love the fact that he's willing to speak his mind. This in part is a huge reason why we don't get to hear him very often during the years. And look, this was the first comments that he had made basically since, I want to say, like, the trade deadline. Wow. So, yeah, first public comments. I think he had been quoted by Pierre LeBrun in one of his stories. And look, Pierre, I mean, he's got these guys and, like, you know, he's got it on a Rolodex. Like, you know, he knows everyone, and he's tremendous at his job, and being able to get Bob clearly was a great get for him. But, like, you know, as far as speaking to reporters, Bob hasn't talked to anyone. So it was kind of like a, wow, you waited all this time, and then, like, you basically just kind of, you know, ripped into your coach a little bit and your players. I mean, we have to sort of think of this in context. And, you know, Bob does this pretty much every year. Like, as far as ripping on the coach, I was a little shocked by that. But also, I mean, look, you have to think of the situation here. I mean, a lot of GMs love the players they draft. A lot of GMs think that the players that they draft and the players they scout and develop are amazing, and the coach, you know, screws them up. And so Dallas Eakins has coached these guys through the minors now to the NHL. And Bob Murray clearly thought that there was more in these players than they showed last year. I personally believe there was more in these players than what they showed last year. I thought that a lot of the young players they had weren't very good. You know, as far as putting Dallas on blast like that a bit, you know, I think it, the one thing I know about Dallas Eakins is that I don't think he likes it when people bring up Edmonton. That was a really messed up situation there. I don't know if anybody could have succeeded. He was there before Connor McDavid was there. And I mean, look, like it really took drafting a generational superstar for things to kind of get righted, and they're not even fully right there. So, and by the way, real quick on an aside, I want to just say, we never give Peter Chiarelli the props he deserves, and he probably doesn't deserve them, but he got Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on 8-year contracts in Edmonton. Like, that's at least something. But anyway, but beyond that, you know, I thought it was unfair, Bob, to bring up the Edmonton stuff. How good a job has Dallas done this year? I go by, you know, what my co-host Shane O'Brien tells me when he watches the Ducks. He actually watches more Ducks games than I do, because, you know, he just loves watching hockey. And for me at night, I watch the highlights, but I have a kid and I go to bed before the game's over. And I know OB just completely loved the way that the team played. I know when he was in San Diego, loved playing for Dallas. I know other people who love playing for Dallas. I'm a little surprised. I'm really surprised by how hard Bob went on him and bringing up Edmonton. But at the same time, I don't think Dallas has had a winning record in the NHL. And though the team was playing a little bit better down the stretch, like they still weren't winning at a high level. And I think it speaks in some ways the level of excellence Bob demands. I think, you know, also just again, Dallas is, he hasn't really won the NHL. You can say those things about him and it can, you can make that argument. But I don't know, like, by the way, I don't know if you can hear my kid in the bath. Like, right next, okay. Gotcha.
It's like, Ethan okay. Wants his daddy.
No, no. But, well,
Ethan yeah, wants to be on the Leo Kurvaki show.
Send Ethan in.
You know, we may have to wait till his bath's over. He may be a little naked right now, actually. I don't know. Like, the whole thing with Bob and saying that is, look, like, he's been there for 13 years, right? They haven't won a Stanley Cup. Dean Lombardi got fired, you know, in 2015. Or was it 2015 or 2016? I think it was 2017, actually. God, every year I don't understand anymore. But he won 2 Stanley Cups with the Kings, and they just kind of fell belly up when he left. And Bob has been given a lot of time to win one. He hasn't. He's fielded competitive teams. And the Bucks got to stop with him at some point. And to deflect to your coach and players again, look, I love the honesty. I understand it. But and I think he did take some responsibility, but – ultimately, I think ownership needs to take a longer, harder look at that franchise and see where its problems are and where fixes can be made, because you're going 2 years now without the playoffs and you're probably going to end up with 3 next year, if, you know, whenever the season starts. I don't see them making the playoffs next year. So interesting times ahead in Anaheim. That's my long-winded answer. I have a much shorter answer in Eric Stevens' story about the whole situation in the comments section of The Athletic. So
there you go. So, check it out, theathletic.com. Josh Cooper is, of course, the host of Point Breakaway alongside former NHL defenseman Shane O'Brien. And for all your Ducks and Kings coverage, of course, The Athletic does a great job covering it. Lisa Dillman covers the Kings. Eric Stevens covers the Kings alongside Josh as well. Joshua, thank you.
Yeah, no worries. And also, real quick, on Point Breakaway, we had Atlanta Thrashers legend Andy Sutton, never quite made it to Winnipeg, but talking about how he has alpacas living in California. And 13 chickens, and I think he said 2 goats. I think it's 3 alpacas, 2 goats, 13 chickens, and many more animals, and living off the land and owning a hockey company. So
there you go.
Go and listen, and he and Shane O'Brien have all sorts of weird stories when they
You cover all bases on Point Breakaway, then.
The podcast is awesome, Josh. You guys are doing an awesome job. We appreciate you jumping with us.
Always love talking to you guys, and even better to see you all this time.
It's been a long time.
Dave, I would have worn my Whalers shirt if I had known you were wearing yours. Seriously.
Go Whalers.
I know. Such a good shirt. Represent. All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks,
all right, Josh. Take care.
Peace, Josh.
There he goes, Josh Cooper of The Athletic, joining us on the Illegal Curve Zoomcast this evening to talk about
Curvecast.
The Curvecast, I know. But when I say it's the Illegal Curve, you see, it's my problem. I should just call it the Curvecast. But when I start saying Illegal Curve, I can't then call it the Curvecast after saying that. It's too much of a mouthful. So anyways, there was Josh Cooper joining us. We always love talking to our good buddy Josh. We've known him from, for many, many years back when he was on the Preds beat and he used to visit Winnipeg on a regular basis. And he was, welcomed to the press box by us. And he wasn't sure what he was in store for, but he's still talking to us all these years later.
We actually had Josh on the show before the Jets even came back. You're going back to like 2009, so... He's been a wily veteran of the show for sure. And hopefully next time we have him on, we're going to be back on air. Are we going to be back on air soon? Drew, what's going on here?
Well, we're on air right now. If you're asking if we're going to be back on TSN Radio 1290, hopefully that'll happen soon. Again, the COVID pandemic is putting a crimp in all of our plans. But again, fingers crossed that'll be sooner rather than later. And if it's not, we'll just continue doing these Curvecasts, so because people get to see our pretty faces if they so choose to watch the video in addition to the audio.
And we don't physically have to be near each other, which is something we've always dreamed about, right?
It's really a win-win-win situation as far as I'm concerned. I don't actually have to see your faces. Again, smell
you. You have to see our faces. That's not true.
I do the whole thing with my eyes closed, though, so I don't have to. Yeah. Any final thoughts, guys? Anything else you want to touch on before we call it a night? We've been at this for, it'll be almost an hour by the time it's all said and done. So any final thoughts from either of you? Hockey related? Anything else going on in the world? Whatever you want, you can. I'll give you an open mic night for a couple minutes.
Open mic night? What is this? Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club here, Drew?
Back open, so you can get your tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com. They've reopened with, of course, all of the required social distancing protocols being followed. And I'll tell you what, if you've ever needed a laugh, now is the time that you would need a laugh. So check them out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Also want to pay homage to our other sponsors, Bernstein's Deli. They're back open. The deli's open and the restaurant side is open. The deli, the grocery side has been open this entire time, but the restaurant side is now back open. Zappia Group Realty, our good friends, Frank and Mauro Zappia, if you're any of your real estate needs. And of course, Linden Market Dental Center, our buddy, Dr. Les Rikus, for all your dental needs as well. So those are the big sponsors of the Curvecast, as well as the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. So we want to give them a shout out. How's that for a second?
How I teed you up there? I mean, I set that all up, Drew. I know.
Well done, Ezzy.
You had to get the reads in. So, no, I mean, it's going to be obviously, you know, very interesting to see, you know, what happens over the next few weeks. We were talking about it with Josh Cooper, but, you know, you ask for some final thoughts. That's what, you know, I'm thinking right now because, you know, here we are, you know, June 4th, and, you know, we're hoping that NHL training camps, you know, start around, you know, July 10th, but, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. So, you know, that's what, you know, I'm kind of thinking about right now and anxious to see, you know, where this goes with the NHL and the NHLPA, because I think, you know, you guys would both agree that, you know, there's going to be, you know, a lot of different, you know, issues that have to be addressed. And
well, to your point there, Ezzy, I was on with Hustler, when was that? Yesterday? Wednesday? I think I was on with Huss yesterday. And I, you know, everything so far on its face has been copacetic between the NHL and the NHLPA, and I don't know that that's going to continue. The NHLPA, you know, they've been talking about how Donald Fehr has been so. Some people have even said he's acquiesced to the NHL or he's rolled over to Gary Bettman. Donald Fehr doesn't roll over to anybody without getting something in return. So I think there's still, like you, to your point, Ezzy, a long way to go before training camp, before the restart of the play-in games and everything else. So I think there's still some more twists and turns on this road to getting back to playing hockey, Dave.
Well, I would just add, I think the easy stuff is what's happened. I think these are the first couple of dominoes, the return to play plan, you know, setting the playoff structure, the play-in series structure. Those are pretty easy because, you know, they're all theory, right? These are theoretical. This is what we envision happening. It's a lot more. It's going to be a lot more difficult to actually put this stuff into you know, a planet to place, phase three, phase four, you know, actual training camps. You know, I mean, we're talking, and to be honest with you, as much as I love hockey and I want to see hockey back, I don't want to see the Canadian government changing the rules for hockey players.
I agree.
We've done a, as far as I can tell, in Manitoba specifically, but in the country in general, but I mean, I really can only speak to what's going on in our province. Like, I think we've done an excellent job in maintaining, you know, relatively low numbers. And, you know, when you suddenly open things up to that many people, mm-hmm. the rules are the rules. You know, and the reality is people, as much as they want to see sports back, I don't want the rules bent because of this and then something happens. And, you know, and God forbid someone's great-grandfather, grandfather, parent, sister, brother, whatever it is, something happens to them. So the reality is, I think, you know, to the idea of phase three, the idea of training camps, you know, happening specifically in Canada, you know, we're hearing about the Canucks thinking about going to the States to do theirs. Kevin Cheveldayoff on his conference call last week said that's not something they're considering, or, you know, maybe, well, yeah, he said it's not something they're considering right now.
I think they're going to start.
Well, they may be, but the point is that's a big factor, right? Because, sure. You know, really, it almost called for players to come back
2 weeks from now.
Yeah, within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
To quarantine, and then, you know, to be able to practice, and then they go there. And the States has already said they're going to give an exemption.
Carte blanche, yeah.
Well, because they've already just declared them essential workers or something like that. So anyways, the point is that it's right now the easy work has been done. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, the numbers have seemed to be decreasing. Again, I'm not a COVID expert, so I don't want to speak out of turn, but it seems like it's decreasing, you know, in a lot of places. So obviously a good thing.
Yeah.
Makes it a little bit easier maybe for hockey to return, sports to return. But, you know, the Penguins said that one of their players tested positive, right?
Today.
I think if I read it right, he's already recovered from it.
Yeah.
But the point is that could happen more, you know, more frequently as this thing goes along. So,
and let it happen somewhere else. Don't let it, you know, like you said, we have what, 7 active cases here in Winnipeg right now.
Yeah.
In Manitoba.
Well, Manitoba.
Yeah. So let it happen, you know, let it happen somewhere else. Don't import a problem that isn't a problem.
Well, yet. And you see the value, you see what the NBA is doing, right? Like, they're taking over Disney World.
Yeah.
You know, but again, like, and it's one, like, it sounds wonderful.
The NHL should go to Disneyland then, if the NBA's got Disney World.
Would they say Disneyland or Disneyland? Like, what movie?
That's
what movie is that?
That's
I don't know.
No, Bulletproof. Another Adam Sandler, but Bulletproof.
Bulletproof. Wow.
This is a good one.
I don't even think I've seen
Wayne,
that one.
Adam Sandler. What?
I've never seen that one, but anyways, go on.
What? Really?
Sorry.
All right. But anyways, the point is that I think that's kind of like, and you're hearing about it. Like, I don't remember which NHL player said it. It was a Nick Foligno. Said, like, anybody who tries to keep me from my family, I'm going to fight them, basically.
Yeah, it was Nick Foligno. Anton Strahlman of the Florida Panthers has come out and said that he's not sure if they should be, if it's worth returning to play.
Right. So I'm just saying, like, so the easy stuff has been done. But the reality is, especially when you have to get more and more players on board, you know, Blake Wheeler talked about it. You know, if I'm a young guy who doesn't have a family, mm-hmm. then I don't really care. Blake Wheeler has 3 kids. I think he said under 7.
Yeah, Matthew Perreault's got 3 kids. I mean, if you're asking guys
right,
to be
so
away from
is
their
you're
families.
Not, you can't abandon your family for 2 months. And you're also not going to keep them in a hotel for 2 months. I don't care if it's a 5-star, you know?
Yeah.
Especially in the summer. It's one thing, it's like, okay, it's the winter. In the summer, who wants to be cooped up? So I just think, like, I think that the easy stuff has been done. I just think that there's a lot of heavy lifting still that has to get done before we're seeing serious hockey back in North America.
Final word tonight goes to Dave Minuk, and he did a very good job. He gets the bonus points if we're assigning bonus points here.
I'll do like a little graphic on the video, and I'll give myself like a little like thumbs up.
Yeah, you're going to spend hours making a little thumbs up. Add a little
whatever it takes there. All night.
I know, exactly. As long as you get the credit, that's all that's what counts the most. Ezzy, thank you for your contributions and for your continued hairstyle. We appreciate it. And I am continue to be jealous of it.
No, don't be jealous, Drew. I mean, it's really just, you know, how I was created. I really have to get a haircut, but I'm probably not going to have a haircut next week. But eventually, I'll get it chopped up. But yeah, you know, looking forward to doing another one next week. And this is working out perfectly because, unlike Josh, who, by the way, texted me about 10 minutes ago and asked, can I come back on real quick? Ethan is out of the bath. and then I responded 5 minutes later, sure, come back in, but he might have, you know, not seen the text. But my kids aren't here right now. They're at the cottage. So, you know, these Thursday night Zoom casts work out perfectly. I've got the whole house to myself.
You're not wearing pants, are you? Yeah.
That's how he started with
shorts. I'm wearing shorts. I was wearing sweatpants last week. I'm wearing shorts this week.
By next week, we're going to be
Who knows what happens next week?
God help us at that point in time. And with that burning image in your retinas, we're going to say goodnight. And thank you for everybody for joining us on the second ever Curvecast. For those of you watching on YouTube, our apologies for having to look at our faces for the last hour plus. And for those of you who are listening to us on via our podcast, well, hopefully you'll be able to hear us very soon again back on TSN Radio 1290. For Ezra Ginsberg and for Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the Illegal Curve
Peace
cast.